Welcome to today's quarterly all-employment call. My name is Derek Shields. I'll be serving as moderator today. I appreciate being with everyone and for you taking the time to join us for this all-EN call. Before we begin with our agenda and presentations, I'd like to review a few logistics and housekeeping items. Let's move forward two slides, please. First, the meeting is being recorded and transcribed. Presentation materials from today's call will be made available within 2 weeks. Per the ticket program agreement, Part 3, Section 11, Subsection I, EN staff are not permitted to record this meeting nor capture the transcript. Closed captioning is available for participants who join using the MS Teams application or by using the separate closed caption link provided in the GovDelivery email announcement for today's call. Two different ways to access these. First, to turn on closed captions in MS Teams, please go to the three ellipses that are at the top of the MS Teams window, select More, and then go down that list to select Language and Speech, and then turn on Live Captions. That way you can see the automated captions. When using the link option, please use the link that was in chat or in that GovDelivery email and put that in a separate window of the browser of your choice, and that will allow you to view those closed captions. Okay, next slide. With our meeting logistics continuing, please feel free to ask questions in the MS Teams chat section. Our team is standing by to help facilitate those questions to today's presenters. We will have live Q&A sessions during today's call. In fact, we will have three. If joining via phone and you wish to ask a question, remember there's a couple steps that you have to do. First, raise your hand using the *5, and then you'll be unmuted by our facilitator. We'll then ask you to hit *6 so you can speak. If joining via MS Teams and you wish to ask a question aloud, we encourage you to raise your hand with the MS Teams raise hand feature. We'll then call upon you and unmute your mic so you can ask your question live. We do request that you limit questions to one per participant. Additional questions or comments can be sent to us via email at enoperations@ssa.gov. Those questions that are not answered during the live EN call today will be forwarded to our panelists, so we ensure you receive a response. We do encourage your questions today. We certainly appreciate your participation, and thank you in advance for being here. All right, next slide. This slide, we have today's agenda. We have a lot of topics and a lot of presenters to bring to you some important updates and other information. First, as I'm doing now, we have a welcome logistics and agenda review. That will be followed by Laura York's presentation on the Payroll Information Exchange, or PIE. Followed by that, Renee Moore will provide a presentation on the Benefits Planning Query, BPQY. Many of you submitted some questions that would allow Renee to focus on providing those responses. Following both Laura and Renee, we'll have our first Q&A session. Laura and Renee will be joined by Christine Irwin Tribbett to answer any of those questions that you may have. After that Q&A session, we'll move to a presentation by Seth Hartig. Seth will talk about the Ticket to Work survey. Then there'll be a following Q&A session too. Seth will be joined by Holly Metelowitz, Sarah Croak, and Ellie Stinnett. And they'll be able to answer any specific questions about the survey at this stage of the survey process. Next, after Q&A session two, we'll have Aaron Weidman present on a couple key Social Security updates. Aaron will be followed by Jamie Pendergraft with a communication and outreach update and sharing a video that is now available and playing. And last, I'll provide an update on the timely progress review. This will be followed by a Q&A session three for really all of the different areas for those presenters that are still with us. So with that, we have 90 minutes together. We have a packed agenda. We appreciate you being with us. I would now like to proceed to the next slide. With that, we will, as we do as a custom to each meeting, welcome the new ENs that we have. From Connecticut, we have the Chippens Hill Group, LLC. They're doing business as Clearweave Careers. Next, we welcome from Colorado Expert Vocational Insights, an LLC out there. In West Virginia, we have Donica LLC. We welcome them. And two more from Georgia, the Workforce Career Center, and from Maryland, Reinvented Destiny LLC. With these five additional new ENs, we look forward to your participation in supporting beneficiaries on their journey to financial independence, and certainly appreciate your interest in helping them on their pathways to work. All right, now that we've welcomed the new ENs, it's now my pleasure to introduce Laura York. Laura is in the employment support area of the Social Security Administration and will present on the payroll information exchange. Laura, over to you, please.
Thank you, Derek. Good afternoon, everyone. We have talked about PI, or the payroll information exchange, on previous calls, but I just wanted to provide a brief reminder of what PI is, in case you're new to it or you just need a refresher. PI is the payroll information exchange, which SSA currently has with Equifax. If a beneficiary works with an employer in Equifax system, and that covers a large swath of employers, those beneficiaries do not need to report their earnings from that employer to SSA, as long as they have a signed PI authorization form on file. And that specifically is form SSA 8240. That earnings data will automatically be used to adjust SSI payments. Additionally, those earnings are used to trigger a work CDR months or years before SSA gets earnings data from other sources when a beneficiary isn't reporting directly. We ask that all ENs help their ticket holders sign and submit the 8240. More information about PI and the authorization can be found online at www.ssa.gov/ssi/spotlights/spot-pi.htm. And while the data that I've talked about today is targeted towards SSI, the same information generally holds true for SSDI as well. And now I'll turn it over to Renee.
Thank you, Laura. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Renee Moore from the Employment Support Team. It's a pleasure to be here. And I ditto Derek's sentiment. Thank you for sending in your questions ahead of time, because it helped us tailor the presentation to the information that matters most to you. So I'm going to start with the scope and context. Next slide, please. Thank you. Before we begin, I want to clarify that, or the scope that I can speak to. So I'll be focusing on the BPQY-related processes and general guidance. Some of the questions we received, particularly those related to internal operations, they fall outside of the scope of employment support. So today I'll focus on the topics that I can address in my role as an employment support staff member, but I'm not going to leave you hanging. Like they said, we're going to take down any questions that does not pertain to the BPQY or has to be answered by another subject matter expert, and we'll get the information back to you. So if I don't speak to a question that you submitted, it's not being ignored. I just don't have the authority or the expertise to address it here. So first, I want to make sure we start off on the same page, same page, same page. So you all work with the BPQY on a regular basis, right? You've seen it. You know what's on it. So I won't spend a lot of time talking about the things you already know. Instead, I'll talk about how it functions and the processes for obtaining one, because that context will help answer some of your questions about access, about accuracy, and about timing. So let's start with what the BPQY is. So the BPQY is a summary of the information that we have or SSA has for the beneficiaries in our records. It reflects the most current data that we have in our host systems and on the beneficiaries' different records at the time the BPQY is produced, right? And it contains the most relevant information for supporting benefits counseling, return to work planning, all of that good stuff. Next slide, please. What the BPQY is not. The BPQY is not creating the data itself, and it is not independently verifying the accuracy of the data on the report. In other words, the BPQY is basically extracting the information that already exists in SSA's systems and in the beneficiary's records, and it compiles it into one report. That's all it does, is not creating the information. So that speaks to some of your questions about accuracy and about direct EN access. The accuracy of the report depends on the accuracy of the source records. And since the BPQY pulls the data from multiple restricted systems, its use is restricted to only specific personnel, basically the ones that have a legitimate need to access it. Even most of SSA's employees do not have access to the BPQYs. But that's where collaboration with you guys is valuable to us, because sometimes we don't know there's an error on the record until it's identified on something like a BPQY report, right? So when that happens, please have the beneficiary reach out to SSA and let us know that there's something incorrect on the record so we can review and correct it. And that will correct the underlying record, which will correct the BPQY. Next slide, please. Quite a few of you had questions about the inconsistent information on the BPQY. Now, we already said that the BPQY is only as accurate as the underlying record, right? But there are some instances where the information appears to be inaccurate, but it's actually not. And I'll give you a couple of instances. Number one, you're probably looking at the BPQY as one coordinated record, right? And you probably think all the data in each field coordinates with one another, but that's not the case, right? It's bits and pieces of data pulled from different part of a beneficiary's record. So if a field doesn't make sense, it may be incorrect, or it may not make sense because it's not meant to coordinate with the other fields. I'll give you an example because I know that sounds confusing. So one of the questions you sent in was, why is the total family cash different from the full and net amounts, even when the individual is the only person on the record? Well, that's because those fields aren't showing the same type of amounts. They're not calculated the same way, and they're calculated differently based on what they're meant to show, right? So I've never been a claims technical examiner. We call them CAs. So I can't explain how the CAs come up with those numbers, but I can tell you that on the BPQY, they all represent something different. So just really quickly, the full amount is the amount before deductions and reductions. So think of it like the gross amount on your paycheck. The net amount is just that, the amount payable after deductions and reductions. So think of that as your net amount on your paycheck. But the total family cash is a little different. It's the maximum amount payable if there are other people eligible on the record. So sometimes it's the same as the full amount, sometimes it's not, but it's not extra money that can be paid to the number holder. It's the amount payable if there are other people on the record, right? So it's not meant to match the full and net amounts. So it's not necessarily wrong or weird. It just represents something different, and that causes confusion sometimes. Another reason is some of the fields aren't intuitive. And here's another example. One of the questions you guys sent in was, Why is there a trial work period start date and a trial work period end date when the total number of trial work months used is less than 9? So an end date implies the trial work period has ended, right? Not for the BPQY. well, not necessarily, that is. So if there's an end date on the BPQY, but the trial work period has less than 9 months, the end date represents the last trial work month recorded in SSA's systems at the time the BPQY was generated. I'll say that again. If there's an end date for the trial work period, and then there's less than 9 months in the trial work period, the end date represents the last trial work month recorded in SSA's system at the time the BPQY is generated. So let's say, for example, if the individual completed 5 trial work months, right? And that's at the time the BPQY is created. And that 5th month is June. The BPQY end date will say June. The individual still has 4 trial work months left. They do. But the BPQY is just reporting the last thing it saw. So I hope that makes sense. And I hope that clears that up a little bit. And that's part of the significance in understanding that the BPQY reflects what's in SSA's systems at the time that is generated. And then lastly, the fields are updated at different times. So another one of your questions was, why are SSI earnings listed as verified, but SSDI is listed as not verified and vice versa? So by and large, it's because SSI and SSDI use different sources, right? They have different processes for verifying the earnings. So their status on the BPQY does not always align. If the SSI earnings have been verified, the BPQY will show verified for the SSI earnings. If the SSDI earnings have not been verified, the BPQY is going to show not verified. It will show like the alleged amount until the technician goes in and puts the actual verified amounts. And this is another opportunity for even greater collaboration with you guys, because if there are discrepancies on the earnings record when you are discussing the BPQY with an individual, please encourage them to contact the agency and provide supporting documentation, because in some cases, simply providing a W-2 or paycheck stubs can help SSA review those earnings and verify the unverified earnings, make any corrections to the underlying record, and then the next time a BPQY is pulled, it will have verified for SSDI. Next slide, please. Or for both. Sorry. Handling and time frame. So processing. Requests are processed with SSA's overall service environment, right? And what I mean is it's not an isolated workload. It's part of everything else that's going on in the field office on a daily basis, right? So fulfillment depends on workload demands at the time it's received. Time frames, when they get them back to you, vary across offices because of variables like staffing, priority workloads, workload volumes. So some offices are faster than others, depending on things like how busy they are and what else they're dealing with at the time. So also keep in mind that field offices are currently appointment only too. So in short, it really just depends on how busy the office is and what else they're dealing with at the time. That dictates how soon they can get the BPQY back to you. Next slide, please. Best practices. So I want to shift from how the BPQY works to ways you can help make sure that it's processed smoothly. Right. So I have a couple of your questions here. You ask things like, what is the fastest way to receive a BPQY? Why does it take 30 days or more to receive the report. Why are we being charged a fee? That's a big one. So let's take our time with this because these are three of the most received questions that we get. And some of them are just basically pretty common issues that caused the delay. So here are some ways to avoid returns. So sending the BPQY to the right office. So requests are filled by the office that services the claimant's SSN, right? An office that does not service the claimant's SSN cannot fill the BPQY request. So sending it to the wrong office will cause a delay because they don't forward it to the servicing office. They return it to sender. And then the sender has to resubmit it to the correct office. So sending it to the right office, that's one way to avoid a delay. Making sure the 3288 is completed fully. The 3288 is the consent form. I'm sorry, you guys. Consent form is completed fully and accurately because if it's not, it will be returned. There's an example of a properly completed 3288 in the BPQY handbook. Do you guys know that there's a BPQY handbook? Yes, in the chat if you do. Or no, if you don't. Okay, yeah. So quite a few of you know that there's a BPQY handbook. Excellent. There's an example in the back of the handbook of what a properly completed 3288 looks like. And the handbook, it's not a cure-all, right? But it can help with some of the more basic issues. There's also in the back of the handbooks a frequently asked questions page. And some of the frequently asked questions that I'm going to share with you are actually in the BPQY handbook. Another best practice, use the current version of the consent form when possible. So our policies do allow prior versions of a 3288 as long as it's completed in accordance with consent requirements, but using a current version of the form just prevents delays. But if you use a prior version and it's returned, the quickest path forward is to simply resubmit using the newer form so that you can obtain the BPQY without any additional delays. And on another note, you asked if there was a way to differentiate between the 3288 consent form for a BPQY versus other 3288 requests. And the example that you gave was like one that was sent in for future use. If someone sends in a BPQY for future use. So privacy and disclosure policies, they're outside of my purview. However, I do feel comfortable giving a little advice, and that is there are very specific guidelines when it comes to consent and disclosure, so they should be followed as written for any request, not just the BPQY, for any request that requires consent. Deviating from those instructions, it can result in delay or even rejection. Right. So don't do anything that to try to make it stand out. Just complete it the way that it is supposed to be completed. Another question you guys had was if you do not receive the BPQY in 30 days of the request, what should you do? If you do not receive the BPQY within 30 days, we have to give the field office at least 30 days to fill the request because, again, it's part of all the other workloads or part of the office workloads. But follow up with the local field office when that happens. You can follow up with the field office if you do not receive it in 30 days. Next slide, please. All right, we're coming down to the home stretch, you guys. I just got a couple of frequently asked questions, and then I'm done. Disclaimer, when it comes to disclosure, consent, privacy, fees, those are all laws and agency-level policies, and the BPQY is not exempt from them, right? That said, We do not charge a fee for the BBQY when it's for return to work planning, okay? So it's important that your consent form clearly states that the request is for return to work purposes. There's an example of that in the back of the BPQY too, like the language to put on the 3288. But what happens if you have a subsequent question after the BPQY is filled? This is another biggie. So those requests can vary, right? Your questions can vary. And if they fall outside of the scope of the BPQY, they are subject to standard disclosure policies, including fees and maybe even a second 3288. So I don't have a blanket response for you today because, again, privacy and disclosure is agency level. But the good news is we are developing a formal policy for the BPQY. There's a procedure that already exists, but not a policy. And we are working on creating a policy for the BPQY, and it's expected to support more consistent handling across the board of issues like if you have a follow-up question. Okay? So be on the lookout for the new BPQY policy. Digital, am I out of time? You guys, do I still have a few more minutes?
Renee, this is Derek speaking. You're doing fine on time. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Derek. Digital signatures is a big one. The BPQY is not authorized to accept a digitally signed consent form. So we still need a wet signature for the BPQY on the 3288. Receiving the BPQY via fax and email. So with fax, we can return the BPQY to a third party if the written authorization, the consent form, specifies that we can use fax to return it to you. Okay, so the 3288 must say that we can return the BPQY via fax. That's also in that example in the back of the handbook. There's like one line that just says something like, I authorize you to return the BPQY via fax. That simple. For email, though, it's a little different. There are specific guidelines for us to follow when it comes to email due to privacy laws and also because email is not secure. Well, we consider it unsecured unless certain conditions exist, right? So we can only return a BPQY by email to recipients listed on the agency's secured partners list. So we have a list of individuals who we can communicate via email. So if you want to receive a BPQY via email for your clients, you should get on the secured email partners list. And if you'd like to be added to that list, send an email to the team that administers the secured list. I'm going to give you the mailbox. Their mailbox is D as in Doug, L as in Larry, P as in portal, dot team at ssa.gov. That's dlp.team. at ssa.gov. Let them know that you're an employment network, that you provide return to work services for SSA's beneficiaries, and you'd like to be added to the secured email partners list, and they'll tell you everything that you need to do. There are a few requirements, though, right? And because I'm me, I'm not going to leave you hanging. I contacted that office to handle it, to ask them. And they said that you have to have a business domain, right? So they cannot set up, they cannot put you on the secured partners list if it's like Hotmail, Gmail, Yahoo. But if you have a business domain like ssa.gov, right? Then we can add you to the secured partners list. You also need a technical contact / email administrator who can set up administrative actions on you guys' end, right? So SSA will set it up on our side, but they need someone to contact to set whatever it is that needs to be set up on your side. So you send the email to that email address, and they'll tell you what they need, what to do, who to contact so that you can get on that list. BBQY fields description. So I can't go through all the fields on a BBQY, right? But you can find the field descriptions in the handbook. And it clears up some confusion about what the fields, what the fields mean. So I'm going to add a link to the handbook just in case there are people who do not have a link to the handbook. I'll post a link to one of our web pages that has it. I'm coming down the home stretch. Can we put IRS earnings data back on the BPQY? No, we can't. The IRS owns the IRS's data, and they have not authorized us to add it back on the BPQY, so we can't put it back on there. And lastly, this is a big one, my SSA. You guys wanted to know when or why we haven't added the BPQY to my SSA. Listen, we are actively working on the modernization efforts to put the BPQY behind my SSA. And we have been for quite a while, actually, and we will continue to. So just be patient. But until then, the beneficiaries can just use the same existing channels to obtain a BPQY. But listen, we are working on it. That's a big ticket item for us, and we're trying. That's it. Are there any questions for me?
Thank you so much, Renee, for your presentation and reviewing the details and the practices and the FAQs. Before we get those questions presented to you, which we've had many in chat, and we might have some raised hands, if we could go forward to the next slide, I'll just remind folks about how to participate through Teams. You can enter your question into chat, as many have already, or you can select the raise your hand option, and we will unmute you and call upon you. Or via telephone, a two-step process, raise your hand using *5, we'll then call upon you and unmute you and remind you to then press *6. We do request that you state your first name, the EN name, and ask your question. And we do also ask that for some of you in chat that are answering questions that should be answered by Social Security to refrain from doing so to ensure that we get the most accurate and up-to-date responses coming from these Social Security presenters. And with that, we are going to open it up for our first Q&A to Laura York, who covered the PI refresher, and then, of course, with Renee and her BPQY presentation. Let's start out. We have a raised hand, so I'll go over to Catherine for that, and then we'll come over and do the posted ones in chat. Catherine?
Hey, Derek. We have Michelle. Michelle, you have audio video if you want to ask a question.
Hi, this is Michelle McKnight. I'm with Pride Industries. I had a question on the payroll information exchange. Is there a way or a database somewhere where we can access to see what employers are participating? We have our folks fill out this form right away when they assign their tickets. And so far to date, we haven't had anybody that got a letter back saying that they no longer need to submit their earnings, and no one is getting their earnings attached to their record through this method.
Thank you, Michelle. Let's bring in Laura or one of her colleagues to assist. Laura, good question from Michelle. Any answer or recommendation?
It's actually, I'll turn that over to Christine if Christine's available.
So this is Christine. We cannot share which employers Equifax is working with. So we can't share that information. As for the comment about not receiving, nobody having received a message about not having to report, it could be that their employer is not reporting earnings through Equifax, not using them as a data payroll provider, and so therefore we don't have the wage information. We are getting about 1 million hits of wages when we send over the list of SSNs per month. So we are getting several people with wage information, but it's not everyone that's on disability, obviously. And if they're not working, then of course we're not getting anything. So just, you might have to hold out here for a little while before you start seeing some notices.
Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Michelle, and thank you, Christine, for helping out. There's an adoption period, and we only have the Equifax private information not available, but there will be a time to see this grow in impact. So appreciate, as Christine said, you holding out and considering to continue that practice. All right, now let's move over to Brittany on our team. She's been tracking the questions that have come in along with the comments from chat, which there have been a lot. So Brittany, let's go back in time a little bit and see if you can pull those out. I think you had some in there for Renee.
Hello, Derek. Yes, we didn't have any questions about PIE except for asking for that link to the website, which was posted in the chat. But we did have some comments about the PIE issues with ticket holders being told not to submit their pay stubs. And I believe this was also addressed in the chat as well. But there were no other questions at this time for a PIE presentation.
Okay. And anything that you want to draw out for Renee's focus on BPQI or re-emphasis?
Yes. There is a question about the BPQI. Why is the date still on the BPQI if it is not within the 5-year rolling period? For instance, if the ticket holder only worked 2 months in 2016, but nothing after that, should they still have the full 9 months? But Social Security system will only show 7 available.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Good question. I wasn't prepared for that one, but are you saying that the date is shown or is not shown?
The question stated that the date was still showing, even though it was not within the 5-year rolling period.
Okay. Hey, yes. So. Oh,
hey,
I'm
Renee,
sorry.
Mm-hmm. I might be able to jump in here. I think what you're getting at is when we make a work CDR decision, and specifically if we're only making a trial work period, so the person's still just working in their trial work period, when we make the decision, the BPQI will show a start and end date and how many months have been used. When we do a subsequent work CDR and the months that we originally had on the BPQI roll off because the beneficiary did not work 9 months within a 5-year period, then we revise the decision to reflect what TWP months have been completed. Or if not, if they're still in their TWP and some months have fallen off, we'll show it. But the BPQI is only taking a snapshot, so it will reflect what the last decision was on the trial work period, as this was the last date, but it can be revised when we do a subsequent CDR to determine if they've completed the 9 months within a 5-year period.
Thank you, Christine. Appreciate that detail. Let's go back to the raised hands. Catherine?
Thank you, Derek. We have Michael. Michael, you have audio video access.
Yes, thank you. My question is regarding the PIE program as well.
With Michael, this is Derek, the moderator. I need to interrupt. Could you get a little closer to your microphone, please?
I'm sorry about that. How's that?
That's perfect. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So regarding the PIE program, does the number holder receive any confirmation from Equifax or anything that the wages have been reported? Because it's on the number holder to make sure the wages are reported to Social Security and that they are participating in this program. What is their receipt or what is their confirmation that wages have been reported? That way, if there's any potential overpayments, the client can then go to SSA and say, well, I enrolled in this program and my wages have been reported based on the form that was submitted. So I'm just worried about overpayments and how, what the proof is that the SSA has received the wages from Equifax.
So when someone signs the authorization and we begin receiving wages from the employer, we send a notice to the beneficiary letting them know they don't have to report their wages anymore. So until they receive that notice, they should continue to report their wages until they get the stop. You don't need to report anymore. If at any time there's a break, i.e. Equifax stops working with that employer, or the employer pulls out of Equifax's payroll services or something like that, we send a subsequent notice to the beneficiary letting them know that we're no longer getting wages from that employer and that they would need to report those wages again.
Perfect. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for your question, Michael, and thank you, Christine, for your answer. And just to reiterate a couple posts if people aren't able to view the chat. We have Amanda. Thank you all for your helpful answers. And Kevin, great presentation to Renee. And Aaron shared, if you're interested in exploring the process of becoming a secure email partner, that detail, dlp.team@ssa.gov. Several of you were asking for that. So please begin that process by emailing dlp.team@ssa.gov and copy enservice@ssa.gov. There's more details there. And then also in the chat, Anna posted the Gov delivery message in from February of this year about BPQY with the cover letter update with some specifics there. Speaking of chat, let's go back to Brittany for anything else that's come in for either Laura, Renee, or Christine. And after this, we'll need to move on to our next presenter. Brittany, anything else?
Yes, we have two more questions. There's a question about the PI web link that was posted. Can that also be used for SSDI customers and income?
Yes, it is. It applies to both.
Thank you. And our last question, why does SSA require you to know information to verify beneficiaries when you have questions after obtaining a BPQY?
I don't understand the question. Can you say that again?
Yes. Why does Social Security require you to know information to verify the beneficiary, such as mother's maiden name, place of birth, when you have questions after you've already obtained the BPQY?
Well, we have to verify identification anytime we're going to communicate with someone, if we're going to be discussing any personally identifiable information. They have to verify your identity.
Thank you, Renee. And with that, Catherine, let's try to get in one more raised hand question before we proceed to Seth in our next presentation.
All right, Derek, we have Amber. You have audio video access.
Thank you so much. So actually, I was the one that asked that question because I've been dealing with that a lot with this verification. And when I'm already on hold with the local office for 20 minutes before I can get somebody on the phone, and then they're like, well, what's their place of birth? I have a 3288 on file. Is this new? Because I've been doing this for 12 years, and I've never until within the last 2 weeks have been asked that question to verify the individual when a 3288's on file. So is that new?
That's a consent question. It's not a BPQY question. So I'll take it down and we'll ask, the privacy consent and disclosure office and we'll get that answer back to you.
Yeah, I appreciate that because on the 3288, sure. I have a majority of those boxes checked, which, you know, indicates discussion with the SSA rep on, you know, regarding anything on their case, you know, when it comes to eligible, really, I can't remember exactly what boxes I have checked, but again, and I have further description in the other information, number 9, I think is what it is. So when I have all those checkboxes boxed, I didn't think it would be an issue. And then having to call the beneficiary back, get those verified information, and then had to wait back on hold with SSA just to get the answer I'm looking for. If I ever get the answer at all.
Understood. Thank you. Yeah, I'll get an answer for that for you. And we'll get it back to you, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the question, Amber, and thank you, Laura and Renee, for your presentations and responding to all these questions. At this time, I would like to proceed so we can hear from our next presenter. If we can go to the next slide. We'll now hear about the Ticket to Work survey update, and this is presented to us by Seth Hartig, also with employment support with the Social Security Administration. Seth, over to you, please.
Thanks, Derek. Hi, everyone. So I think we're ready for the next slide, so you can move to that. So as many of you already know, SSA is currently evaluating the Ticket to Work program to evaluate, to help us to better understand best practices and identify potential improvements. As part of the evaluation, SSA sent out a survey to each EN. Separately, we have also begun sending out interview invitations to beneficiaries to get feedback from them about the program. The most recent program contact at each EN that SSA had on record as of May 2026 received an invitation to the survey by mail and by email in mid-May. These emails came from a contractor, Mathematica, from the email address listed on this slide, tcwevaluation@mathematica-mpr.com. If you have not received a survey invitation but feel you should have, please email Mathematica. If you have received a survey invitation by email and have not filled it out yet, please complete it. The survey is a chance for SSA to learn from your experience and expertise about what is working well within the Ticket to Work program and where SSA can make improvements to the program. By filling out the survey, you'll be giving SSA a better opportunity to make the program better. To help encourage participation, we're also offering a $40 gift card to each person that completes the survey. Near the end of the survey, you can fill out a mailing address where Mathematica should send that gift card. You can also decline the offer to receive that gift card if your organization rules prohibit it. But even if you can't accept the gift card, please, please fill out the survey. We really want your input, and the survey offers a great opportunity for that. And I can see from this meeting chat that many of you have already have input to give, so we really appreciate getting it. In addition to the survey, Mathematica is also conducting interviews with beneficiaries to ask them about their experiences. If one of your clients reports that they have been invited to an interview, please encourage them to participate. We are also offering $40 gift cards for participating in these interviews. If you have questions about these activities, we have some time after the slide for a Q&A. Two project staff from Mathematica, Holly Matulowicz and Sarah Croak, are also here on this call to help answer any questions you have. You're also welcome to contact any of us using the contact information on this slide. If you have concerns about the survey that might prevent you from filling it out, please contact us. Thanks so much, and I think we're ready for the Q&A. I'll turn the mic back, but I'd like to encourage anyone with questions about the survey or the interviews to ask them.
This is Derek speaking. Thank you very much, Seth, for providing the update on the survey and interviews. As Seth mentioned, there's a squad here from the survey team from SSA and Mathematica to answer your questions today. If we can go forward to the next slide. Just a reminder, you can use Teams, you can use phone, *5, *6. We do ask to use your first name, your EN name, and then ask your question. And then only ask one question so others can get there as well. While we do that, I'll pause and ask Rose to go backwards one slide. So we do have Seth's details up in case somebody had a specific question on that. At this time, we do not have any raised hands. I'll check in with Brittany to see if there's been any comments or questions in chat for Seth or his colleagues.
Hello, Derek. There have been no questions regarding the Ticket to Work survey at this time.
Okay, thanks. We'll pause for another moment to ensure that any questions could be asked specifically for these folks. If they're able to stay around, we will have a third Q&A around the top of the hour or so, and we could also take those questions now. We do have two email addresses listed here, seth.hartig@ssa.gov and eleanor.stinnett@ssa.gov. You can always reach out to them, as Seth offered to.
Thanks, Eric. And again, if there's any way we can encourage you to complete the survey, or anything I can say today to help encourage any of you to complete the survey, please tell me. Happy to answer that question. Try to make you complete it. Thanks.
Thank you so much. And it looks like we just had a cut and paste of the contact information in chat, so you could grab that from Anna. While the font size is a little large, it's still accessible there. And feel free, if you prefer, to send your questions or comments directly to Eleanor and Seth, you could do that through those email addresses or to with Holly and Sarah with their phone numbers. Okay. Well, let's see if we got the evaluation link addresses there too. All right. Well, thank you, Seth, for the presentation. We'll be back to open it up for questions for all presenters at the end. Oh, looks like we just got a question in, Seth or one of your colleagues. Have you noticed any changes SSA implemented as a result of the prior surveys?
I'm sorry. You mean the surveys, the ticket to work evaluation surveys from years back, or were you talking about
Well, if Kim could confirm that with a yes in chat, prior ticket to work surveys from prior years. Yeah, Kim has confirmed that. Any knowledge there, Seth, that you would like to share?
It's a good question. I'm about to get back to you on that. But thanks. I know there was a report written certainly from the surveys that were completed before, but I'll have to get back to you on the specific changes that we implemented as a result of those.
Thank you, Seth. Thanks for the question, Kim. We'll note that as a follow-up, as we did with Amber's prior question. As we're about to move to our next presenter, before we do that, I'll just call out that Renee has posted in chat. Here's a link to our Red Page where you can find a PDF of the BPQI handbook itself. I think there was a comment before about one link not being as available to some participants. So hopefully that will assist as well. Thank you, Renee. All right, with that, Rose, if we could go forward two slides, please. We'll proceed to our next presenter, who will be Erin Weidman. Erin is with Employment Support with Social Security, and she has some important updates. Erin, over to you, please.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. So I have a couple reminders and updates for you today. If we go to the next slide. Okay, perfect. So first, on June 8th, we began the second employment verification for the 2026 calendar year. The employment verification process ensures that SSA has up-to-date contact information and ensures that portal users maintain access to the portal. So it's important that you complete the employment verification before the June 18th deadline. So that is a couple days away. Failure to complete the employment verification before the deadline could result in your portal users being locked out of the portal. So nobody wants that. So please complete this verification before the deadline. Additionally, TPM and SSA are currently reviewing the annual performance outcome report, or APOR, data. We will be reaching out to ENs if we have any questions regarding your responses. So please respond promptly to any inquiries you receive. Once the outreach process is complete, we will update your provider information on Find Help. You will receive a Gov delivery message once the Find Help updates have been made based on that 2026 APOR data. So you will know when we make those updates. And lastly, I wanted to mention that we have been experiencing an increased email volume in the EN service mailbox due to the employment verification process and the APOR outreach. So we kindly ask for your patience as we work to respond to all of the inquiries. There is no need to send follow-up emails. Our team is working diligently to respond to all of the emails as quickly as possible. I also want to remind you that when contacting EN service, please include your provider identification number, or PID, and your EN name in the subject line of the email. Additionally, we request that you add a keyword to indicate the purpose for your message. So, for example, if it's questions about portal access. Include the word portal in the subject line for things like work from home requests or cloud storage requests. Include the words approval request. If it's a TPA change form, include the words TPA change form. You know, you get the gist. So using these keywords will help us process your request more quickly and efficiently. So that is all that I have for you today. So back to you, Derek.
Thank you, Erin, for the updates on employment verification, APOR, and EN service submissions. We appreciate those timely updates. At this time, we do have one more presentation on communications and outreach, and then we will open it back up for our final Q&A. So at this time, I'd like to introduce Jamie Pendergraf, the Director of Communications and Outreach with the Ticket Program Manager, who will provide that communications and outreach update. Jamie, over to you, please.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Derek. As Derek said, my name is Jamie Pendergraft, and I am TPM's Director of Communications and Outreach. I'm happy to share some of our updates with you today. Next slide, please. I mentioned this the last call, but I also wanted to, again, reiterate that I'm excited to share that a Ticket to Work promotional poster is now available for use in your outreach efforts. You'll see that we have using flyer and poster interchangeably because we do have a couple of different sizes available. The poster was designed to help you promote the Ticket to Work program, ensuring a consistent and recognizable message. It can be downloaded directly from the marketing materials page, and I know the link is going to be dropped in the chat for that poster. This resource is available in two different sizes, as I mentioned, and it can be used either as a poster or a flyer, giving you flexibility in how you share the information. We do include directions on how to print the poster or the flyer. The flyer is nice and easy because you can just print it using your regular office printer. And then, of course, we do have more detailed directions about printing the larger size as well. We do encourage you to print and display it in your office, community spaces, waiting areas, or partner locations to help us increase visibility of the program. It can also be used alongside other official branding materials to keep messaging consistent across outreach and communications channels. Using these materials helps ensure beneficiaries receive clear, accurate information about the ticket program. And I should also note that the poster does poster and the flyer both have QR codes on them that give us data on how many clicks that they receive. So we know who's coming to our website based on how many posters are shared out there. You may also get questions from folks who have seen our Ticket to Work poster available in the field offices as we are getting folks scanning those QR codes there as well. Sorry, I almost dropped my speaker. So yes, we do really encourage you to share that poster, get the word out there, hang it up in a local coffee shop. Let's get folks more aware of the program and get them to your door so that you can help them find financial independence and achieve financial independence. Next slide, please. Now, on to our WISE webinars. WISE webinars typically take place on the fourth Wednesday of every month and offer valuable insights into the ticket program. They're a great way to stay informed, connect with experts, and explore tools that support the journey to financial independence. We appreciate your help with promoting the WISE webinars. You really do make a difference. We encourage you to continue sharing our social media and other webinar announcements. This month is just a bit earlier and is scheduled for tomorrow at 3 p.m. We encourage you to join us for the topic, Presenting Your Best Self to Employers. You should have received several Gov delivery messages encouraging you to share our Facebook and X posts, and we do ask that you please take a moment to share those with your audience on social media. Next slide, please. Next, we're happy to share our newest outreach video, Introduction to Ticket to Work. This short video highlights how the ticket program helps beneficiaries explore employment and work towards financial independence. As service providers, you're welcome to use the video as an outreach tool to help explain the program to potential participants. The video is currently playing in field offices nationwide, though they are showing a version without sound. You may receive inquiries as a result of the videos, and we'd love to hear if you do. As I mentioned, you're also invited to share this video on social media, add it to your website, or use the video in presentations and outreach events to help expand ticket program awareness. You can very easily share the video from our Facebook page at Choose Work. It is one of our pinned posts at the very top of the page, so just click share and you'll get the word out there for us. I'm now excited to play the video for all of you. Rose, can you take it away?
Ready to work? We're ready to help. Whether you've never worked before or thinking about working again, Social Security's Ticket to Work program gives eligible people with disabilities free, personalized support to explore work. With Ticket to Work, you don't have to choose between your benefits and your future. Your Medicare, Medicaid, and disability benefits stay in place as you see if working is right for you. And that's just one of the many advantages of participating. You won't be doing it alone. Authorized service providers offer career and benefits counseling, job placement help, and other services, all at no cost to you. You'll have peace of mind. With protections from medical disability reviews and a safety net that can restart your benefits if you find that you can no longer work due to your disability, you're in control. You'll set your own goals and then work with your service provider to make timely progress on those goals. And participation is always voluntary. Ticket to Work success story Francis says, "I would recommend the Ticket to Work program 1,000%. I'm living proof that you can transition back to work. Explore the free services and supports available to you. Visit choosework.ssa.gov or call the Ticket to Work helpline at 1-866-968-7842 or 1-866-833-2967 for TTY. Ticket to Work, support, stability, and a path forward when you're ready."
Thank you so much, Rose, and we hope you enjoyed the video and we'll share it far and wide. Next slide, please. Oh, I should also mention about the video. It is available in that marketing materials toolkit on the Your Ticket to Work website, and you should have that link in the chat. It is in the service provider toolkit. Now, here's where we invite you to stay in touch with us. I've said this word a lot this presentation. We encourage you to share our program updates, success stories, and resources on social media to help both us and you reach a wider audience of ticket holders. You can follow and tag us on Facebook at Choose Work and on X at Choose Work SSA. Have an idea for a future blog post? We welcome your suggestions. Email your ideas to ttwsocialmedia@ssa.gov and help us keep the Choose Work blog fresh and relevant. Thank you so much for your time today. And now I'll hand it back over to Derek to wrap it up.
Thank you, Jamie, for those updates on outreach and communications. We do have one final Q&A with our remaining time together. If we could go forward to the next slide, please. Oh, before I do that, our last topical area. On June 2nd, we sent out a Gov delivery entitled Timely Progress Review, or TPR Update. And I'm going to read that notice now to make sure that everyone is familiar with the content that was sent out. The Social Security Administration is performing a one-time timely progress review, or TPR, re-entry for ticket holders who have failed a TPR status and were assigned to an ENS on May 15, 2026. The re-entry will reinstate Medical Continuing Disability Review, or CDR, protection effective June 2026 for ticket holders who have met the earning threshold of at least one quarter of 3 times substantial gainful activity, or SGA, or more in the last 3 years. SSA will be performing the TPR reentries between June 1 and June 30, 2026. That's this month. NENs will be able to see the updated TPR status in the ticket portal. ENs can contact SSA with any questions about the TPR reentry process. Please do not include PII by emailing tprhelpdesk@ssa.gov. So that is the TPR update as provided on June 2nd in the Gov delivery and reinforced today in our quarterly all-EN call. Let's go forward to the next slide, please. This is our third Q&A. We will be taking questions for all of our presenters in the topics that have been covered, but we encourage you to also ask for those items presented by Aaron and Jamie and anything TPR related. We have some SSA colleagues here with us as well. Final reminder, MS Teams, please use the chat or raise hand feature and our facilitator Catherine will call on you, or *5*6 if you're by phone and we'll call on you. We encourage you to state your first name, use your EN name, and then ask your question and limit it to one question per person in order to allow others to get their time too. With that, Catherine, we have a raised hand. Please assist.
All right. Thank you, Derek. Sonia, you have audio video access. You'll need to unmute, Sonia. Hi, this is Catherine.
Can you hear
Sonia?
Me?
Yes, ma'am, sure can.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm Sonia Harrison with Maryland New Directions. We did receive the survey for the employment verification, myself and a staff member. I answered the question, but my staff member did not get the actual survey. So what do we do? For employment verification.
So, yeah, thanks for your question, Sonia. I think this is directed to Aaron. Aaron?
Yes. Yes. So to clarify, you're saying that you received the Gov delivery message about the employment verification, but you did not receive the SurveyMonkey email link to be able to click the button to affirm that, you know, your staffing information is accurate?
So, yes. So I received, it's two staff members. I received it and I answered the question, but the other coworker, he received the email saying it was coming, but he did not answer the question.
Okay. So, yes. Yeah, so the SurveyMonkey link will only be sent to one person EN, okay, or one person per EN. So it's typically going to be whoever is listed as the program contact. In some circumstances, it will be the signatory authority if you are an EN where you have multiple business models, because we could only send one survey per person. So if you have completed that verification, then it is complete for your entire EN and no additional action needs to be taken. But if you want to confirm that yours was received, just based on it sounds like there was some confusion, you can go ahead and email enservice@ssa.gov. Be sure to include in the subject line employment verification assistance, as well as your PID and your EN name, and we can confirm whether or not the actual verification was received by us.
Thank you so much. It did say completed and confirmed at the end. I just was under, I didn't know if everyone, so it's two of us. I didn't know it was just one person, but that.
Yeah. So if you received that, then we got it. So you should be all set and you don't need to take any further action.
Thank you for the question, Sonia. And thanks, Aaron, for your answer. Circle back to Catherine to see if we have any other raised hands at this time.
Thank you, Derek. Kristen, do you have access?
Hi, Kristen. This is Catherine. You have access, audio access. You can ask your question. And we're not hearing you, Kristen. Back to you, Derek.
Looks I'll like work we have with another, Kristen. Yeah, we also have another raised hand. I think Cassie raised her hand. You want to try to unmute Cassie?
Absolutely. Kristen, was that you I was hearing? Go ahead. Okay. We'll pause for Kristen a moment and we'll call on Cassie. Cassie, you have audio video access.
Yeah, income. Will a recipient or claimant be able to see that information in their MySSA account? And if so, how long will it take to be in there?
So this is Derek, the moderator speaking. Can we get you to repeat that? Start by sharing your name and EN name.
Your
No, it's okay. Your audio started to cut in, getting stronger as you started to speak. Just repeat it all, please.
Okay, so my name is Cassie Tafoya, and I am from Washington VR General. And so what I'm wondering is about PI. So an employer's reporting information to Equifax, who's put it, you know, to Social Security, that information, will a claimant be able to see that information in their MySSA account? And if so, how long will it take to update?
Thank you, Cassie, for your question and repeating it. Is Christine still available?
Yeah, I'm on. So when we make a determination about the wages, that's when we will confirm what wage information we have or don't have, and then it's the beneficiary's responsibility to tell us if it's inaccurate, like, i.e., I did not work for that employer, or, you know, I had more, I got a bonus, or I was on leave most of this time and it's not reflected, that kind of stuff. We'll send a notice telling you what earnings information was, well, not you, but the beneficiary will be told how the earnings are.
Thanks for the question, Cassie, and thank you, Christine. I believe Catherine is still working to reestablish capability for the other person. Just check in with Kristen one more time on raised hands. Any other questions, Kristen? Catherine?
No problem. We have another raised hand from UAB. You have audio video access.
Please share your first name, the name of the EN, and then ask your question. Your microphone remains muted. On MS Teams, try to unmute the mic, and then UAB can speak. If that's not able to happen, we encourage you to share your question in chat, and we'll flip over to that. Brittany, in fact, Kristen, who was unable to ask her question live, just placed her question in the chat. Brittany, are you able to read that question aloud?
Yes. Kristen wanted to clarify if TPR will be for all ticket holders or if it is only for those who have failed in the past.
Thank you, Kristen, for that question. We'll ask a Social Security colleague to come in and respond to that.
This is Katie. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, Katie. Sure can. Go ahead.
Yes, the TPR reentry is only happening to those ticket holders who failed in the past.
Thank you, Katie, for that clarification and answering Kristen's question. And she says thank you in chat, too. And if we can go back to the UAB, there's a question, are the posters and flyers Title II compliant? I think that's one that will, unless somebody has an immediate answer, we'll take back and research and then respond with our follow-up. So thank you for that. We have three follow-ups that we'll provide.
And yeah, Derek, we have Cass. Yes, we have Cassie. You have audio video access. If you'd like to ask your question.
Cassie from Washington PR in general again. I'm going back to PI. So thank you for that information. What I want to know though is, will a claimant be able to see those wages in their MySSA account that are reported by employer? If so, how quickly will someone be able to see it so they can follow up with if it's correct or incorrect?
So the only way the beneficiary is going to see it in their MySSA account is if the notice is sent to their email in within MySSA, their account. So the notice of decision would be sent there instead of by mail.
Okay, so they just won't see. The only way they'll know that if it's via an email, but they won't just be listed in there as like if they had reported their own wages, correct?
The notice of decision would tell them what evidence we used. So it'll reflect what earnings information was used in making the decision, both for SSI or SSDI. They both will get a notice.
So should we really be recommending our folks to use PI? Because it sounds like it's not necessarily going to be used every time.
Well, I mean, we're recommending it just because it's easier on the beneficiary because they don't have to report their wages anymore if we're getting the wages from Equifax. For SSI, it results in, the information going directly to the SSI record and updating the record, within that month. For SSDI, we use it as a lead to let us know that somebody is working, and it enables us to start the process faster, to start investigating the work. So we do encourage folks to take advantage of it.
Thanks for the question and follow up, Cassie, and thank you, Christine. At this time, I'd like to switch over to Brittany. She's been monitoring the active chat. Brittany, any questions that you have captured for our presenters?
Hello, Dave. Yes, there was a question regarding the new marketing material and flyers. Can these be accessed on ChooseWork? Anna did post the link to the materials in the chat as well if you aren't able to see it. Also, will the posters be posted at all SSA local offices?
Hi, everyone. This is Jamie. They are available on yourtickettowork.ssa.gov, and they are in the resources section in the service provider toolkit. And then you want to go to the marketing materials. You should have also received an email, a Gov delivery message about them. But they are on Your Ticket to Work, and they are currently posted in the local SSA field offices. We have folks scanning those QR codes to get more information about the program every day, basically. So it's looking good.
Thanks, Jamie. And just to follow up there, those posters are posted. They're not available for someone to take from a field office. They're there for visitors to view on a wall at the field office, correct?
It's Jamie, yes. Thank you, Derek.
No problem. I just want to make sure we're clear there. And I'm sorry if I missed this before, but I know in the field office experience, the video plays. Did you describe that there's two different videos, like what is in the field office playing and what's online that we watched today?
This is Jamie. Yes, I did briefly, but the main difference is that the field office video does not have sound. The field offices have found that videos with sound in it is just too disruptive in the lobby. So they do have access to a file that has a video with sound in it for folks who need that for accessibility purposes. But the video that is playing in the field offices on the loop on their televisions or their screens does not have sound. So that is the difference between what we shared today and what is in the field office.
This is Derek. Thanks, Jamie. I thought you mentioned it. I just want to make sure it was clear. Importantly, they don't need the interruption in the smaller field office locations. But we saw some earlier comments asking about those very things. So now you know. And importantly, some good feedback about the field offices, in effect, marketing the ticket program. So thanks for that feedback, too. Brittany, back to you for any other comments or questions from chat, please.
Yes, we have two questions that are similar. Are the flyers that are new, that the EN flyers, are they able to add EN marketing information to them as well? And how can they use these flyers to bring more ticket holders to their EN agency?
This is Jamie. I did see those questions and I've been sitting here trying to answer them the best I can. I would say that increasing program awareness increases EN availability awareness. So anything to get information out about the ticket program will help ENs in general. But yes, absolutely. I would say that there is room on the poster for you to add some sort of sticker or something like that. If you were to bring a copy of the flyer with you somewhere, you could also bring some of your business cards or something like that. And yes, you are welcome to do that. We just really would like you to try and use some of these materials.
Thank you, Jamie. And Brittany, we'll stay with you for any other comments or questions coming in chat.
Yes, I have a question regarding the TPR and BPQI. How will we receive help regarding the TPRs and BPQIs without a PII violation?
Thanks for that question. On the TPR side, if Katie, if you have a response, or if we need to research that further, we could do that too.
The first step is to reach out to the TPR help desk, and we can start the conversation there and figure out what exact information is needed. And if the conversation does need to go to specific information about specific ticket holders, will then direct it towards a safe way to communicate that information. And I would assume it's the same thing on the BPQI. So we just need to get, you know, an idea of the question that you have. And, you know, sometimes the topic is general enough that we don't have to take it somewhere where we need to discuss PII.
Thank you. So the recommendation is to call the TPR help desk. We provided the email address for that earlier. Is that correct?
Yes, email for TPR's questions, email the TPR help desk, which is all one word, TPRhelpDesk@SSA.gov. And we can, there it is.
Thank you. And Anna just put it in there at the same time. I wanted to make sure we had it accurate for that follow-up. That way the TPR help desk team, who are the experts in this, can respond to your specifics and make sure that if you need a PII safe environment to exchange information as the follow-up, we can do so. This will go through the end of the month. So that is currently underway. The second part of that was a BPQI PII related question. I'm not sure if Renee, our presenter, is still with us because people have moved around quite a bit. Renee, do you want to respond to that? Oh, hi. Would you like to respond to that one?
Sure. So it's part of privacy and disclosure rules and policies. So like the last speaker just said, it would depend on what the information is as to whether or not you'll get. I don't know what you mean by sanction, though. What do you mean by that? What was the end part of that question where they said, how can they get PII without getting, was it sanctioned?
How can they receive help with TPR and BPQI without PII?
Without PII. Okay.
So trying to avoid a PII violation if it's required.
So I'll have to get back to you with the answer for that one.
Okay. And what we've heard consistently from Katie and Renee, both TPR and BPQIs in many instances, PII may not be required. So to have an initial conversation, would allow that to proceed. If it is required, then they can redirect someone to an appropriate and safe exchange tool. We'll capture that as a follow-up, though, and ensure we can address that one with the notes, too.
Hi, Derek. This is Erin. I just wanted to add, so I had added something in the chat, and I'm not sure if this question, the piece about PPQ-wise, was relating to what I added in the chat. Someone had asked about basically unfulfilled PPQI requests, where they weren't getting PPQIs that they were requesting. And I had mentioned if the requests are over 30 days and they're having issues getting those PPQIs, that they can reach out to us for assistance. And I had mentioned, do not put PII in your email, which is still true. If you're reaching out to us for assistance obtaining a PPQI that's over 30 days that you're not able to receive, don't put PII in that email. We will work with you to be able to get the information we need to help with that, to help you get that PPQI in a secure manner. So either through GSO or by phone, things of that nature.
Thank you so much, Erin, for the follow-up there. It's helpful. I'm going to go back to Brittany as we wind down on our 90 minutes together. We have time for a final question or comment. Brittany, anything from chat that you would like to call out?
Hello, Derek. We don't have any more TPR BPQY questions, but we have had two questions about AENs faxing beneficiary pay stubs to the SSA local office. They are clarifying that they can still do that.
Thank you, Brittany. Do we have a colleague from Social Security that would like to respond to this question?
This is Christine. You can still fax pay stubs to the field office, but we would encourage you to encourage the beneficiary to report their wages online. That's the best way to get the work CDR triggered. The field offices don't often have time to take off the information from the fax and load it into the systems. So by helping us out, if the beneficiary could use their MySSA account and report their wages through there, that will lead to a better response from us in getting the work CDR done.
Thank you, Christine. With a couple minutes to go, Brittany, anything else coming in?
What do you suggest when a local office wants to charge for a BPQI?
I responded to that in the chat. Explain that the BPQY is for return to work planning purposes. If it's for return to work purposes, we do not charge. So just explain that you are requesting it for return to work planning purposes.
Thank you so much for that question, and thank you, Renee, for all of your guidance and clarity with that response. We are coming up to our conclusion here, and we're starting to get a few thank yous and appreciation comments in chat. So with that, we are going to turn to close out today's all-EN call. If we could go forward to the next slide. Before we talk about our upcoming event one more time, I'd like to thank our presenters today covering PI, BPQI, the Ticket to Work survey, important updates from the EN program itself, and of course the communication updates plus the TPR Gov delivery refresh. We covered a lot of content. There was a great exchange and a special appreciation to Renee for your presentation on BPQY. There was a very positive response there. With that, we do encourage you to share tomorrow's WISE webinar, as Jamie mentioned, presenting your best self to employers. I'll be on along with Jamie and Ray Cibula covering that, and we have been getting record-breaking attendance and look forward to that tomorrow. Now, the ticket program shares important information through to service providers through our Gov delivery messages, including the ticket portal issues and outages, and we always encourage you to save an email address to make sure that those messages are making it to you and not going to spam or junk. It is ticket2work@subscriptions.ssa.gov. Please make that into your safe senders list. We would certainly appreciate that. And if we can go forward to the next slide, Our next quarterly All-EN call is going to be the next quarter, but we don't have that date confirmed yet. It will be at the same time and likely on a Tuesday. So we encourage you in the meantime, though, to submit your ideas and suggestions for the next quarterly All-EN call to our email address at enoperations@ssa.gov. We love your suggestions, and the team at Social Security responds to those and frames topics as they did today with BPQI FAQs. With that, this ends today's quarterly All-EN call. Thank you for joining, and have a good day.